Welcome to today's episode of Rainer on Leadership, your online home for leadership lessons and advice for the local church. I'm your host, Jonathan Howe, and as always, I'm joined by Tom Rainer, the president and CEO of Lifeway Christian Resources.
Did you know, Jonathan, that before I went into vocational ministry, you know, I was in the business world.
Yes.
And I was on a search committee. Did you know that?
I'm not quite sure. I don't think I did that.
I don't recall.
For what position?
Pastor.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Pastor search committee.
I was on the pastor search committee of my last church, the Golden Springs Baptist Church in Anniston, Alabama. We ended up calling Nelson Kuykendall as pastor. They asked me, they didn't ask me, I just kind of volunteered to be the statistical report guy.
Shocker there.
To put all the things together. And I'll show you after the show the thing I put together. I mean, it is so ugly. I mean, that was 1982. It was so ugly compared to how we could do it today. It's written on
Did you do it in handwritten or?
Typewriter.
You did a typewriter.
Yeah, with labels on the cover.
Electrolux or whatever?
Yeah, Electrolux is a vacuum cleaner, China.
So not that.
It was not a vacuum. I know what you're talking about, but it's not the vacuum cleaner. But something close to that. Yes. Selectric.
Selectric. Yeah. That's the word I was looking for.
Yes, I did use that
People
typewriter.
People who collect those antique typewriters are like
And I did hand-drawn graphs and the like.
To scale?
Probably.
Knowing you, yes.
Probably, because I had arithmetic paper and algorithm paper, so I could have used either one of those.
There's algorithm paper?
Yes. Forget it, Jonathan. Just.
You know what you really needed is on that search committee?
Yeah, I needed a search firm to help me.
Or a copy of Search, the book.
Oh, that great book by William Van Der Blumen. Well, But you're segueing before I'm done, Jonathan, so let me just say one other thing. I look at what I put in that book, and I told about the great ideas of the church by how busy it was.
Oh.
If I had only known then what I know.
35 years later.
What I know now. That was not necessarily a blessing. But anyway, thank you, William Van Der Blumen and Van Der Blumen Search Group, for being a sponsor.
I'm going to come back to that and after we get done here, because I got a question for you on that. But anyway, Van Der Blumen Search Group, they are the premier pastor search firm dedicated to helping churches and ministries build great teams. They've helped hundreds of churches just like yours find their church staff and are uniquely geared to help you discern who God is calling to lead your church. Find out more about Van Der Blumen Search Group by visiting westaffthechurch.com.
Okay, while Jonathan was talking, I ran over to my shelf.
You have this like... ready to go? Like, did you
well,
find
I don't have
this
anything.
Weekend?
I don't have many things on my shelf right now, and so there it is in a binder, and there it is. The pages are yellow. There's a label. Okay, it's upside.
You put the binder upside down. By the way,
that was my copy. The rest of them, but you see, it's typed and.
You did like a whole demographic study and everything.
I sure did.
You were like Percept before they even knew they existed.
But I talked so much about how busy the church was and how any day that you go by there's cars everywhere. Well, what I was saying was you're taking people away from their families. You're taking them away from ministry in the community. You're taking them away from what they should be doing. And so I wrote that report just like many church members many, many years ago. And you see the graphs in there too?
Drawn to scale
graphs. And there I was, a 25-year-old punk trying to explain why you should come to this church.
You're also using church membership as the main data point. Instead of attendance.
In fact, did you know in about 8 out of 10 churches, worship attendance was not even taken back
really?
Then?
Really?
Yeah. Wow. Just Sunday school attendance.
You had church training.
Yes, I did have church training.
There's a section on the WMU.
All right, Jonathan, we need to move on now.
I'm fascinated by this.
Yes. I'll let you look at it later.
So my question related to programs.
Yes.
And it's something we've talked about in the past, is that churches looked to programs to grow a church.
Right.
And so they thought the more programs we have, the more people we'd have, the bigger the church would be. And me, the pastor, I'd be seen as more of a success if I just started all these programs and had more people and more things going on.
Yep.
Not the case anymore.
Well, it wasn't the case back then. It really, you got the program, but eventually you became programitis. And that's when churches would hit all kind of blockages because too few people were doing too many things. And so it really did not work. But if you want to look at the key issue that was taking place is the program became the end instead of the means. There's nothing wrong with the program. Mm-hmm. As long as it's a resource to help you accomplish what you need to accomplish, many cases the program was what you were trying to accomplish. Let's just do this instead of asking why and what are we doing.
Well, and see, and that also is a question I had for you is the reason that we have the leadership vacuum we often have in churches now is because in the past, leadership meant starting new programs.
Yep.
And that doesn't work. I don't know if it really worked back then. But it sure doesn't. It sure doesn't.
It had the illusion of working back then,
and now people can't just like start a program and quote lead a church to growth because it just doesn't work.
I know we got to get to our points and time is already passing by. We try to keep our podcast in 22 or 23 minutes, so I don't want to delay this too much. But let me give you an example of Tom Rainer adding a program. When I was a layperson, back when this search committee report was written.
Okay.
We had an organization then, for those of you who are not aware, I am a Baptist, and the name of the organization was Baptist Men. We didn't use the acronym that often.
From the Brotherhood?
Huh, yes. So, yes, yes.
I just put that together.
Yes, yes. Yes, from what was then called the Brotherhood Commission, we had Baptist Men. And I said, we need to start another program. So I started BYM,
Baptist Young Men.
Why did I do that? Because creating a new program was a success. Did we need to? Nope. Had the fellowship within the BM or within the Baptist Men. Had the fellowship within them. I just started it because creating another activity was seen to be a success. Hmm. So that's the reality of it.
All right.
Let's get to why. So, wow. What an introduction. We've got to do some segues.
Those are all important, though.
Yes.
So, but it really brings us to this first point. Activities became synonymous with ministry.
That is the history of the American church from about the 1930s to about 1990. And the more ministries that you had, the more activities that you had, the more you did things, you were a better church. And that was largely denominationally and parachurch driven. In denominations, it was driven by organizations like the Baptist Sunday School Board and non-denominational groups that were parachurch organizations, and they were pushing their resources to the churches, and the churches then said, we have to have all of these activities.
All right, so was that done? And I'm not saying it doesn't still happen today, but it seems like if you're pushing ministries down, top down from mm-hmm. the denomination, it seems like that becomes a self-perpetuation mode where me at the Baptist Sunday School Board's got to create something new so I can tell churches to do it so they can resource it so they can spend more money with us so we can keep doing, and the cycle just becomes this vicious thing.
Yep.
And all of a sudden at the end it just blows up and then you have this big boom and a collapse of your denomination because the churches can't afford to run those programs anymore.
And within our own denomination, I don't want to understand that we have listeners from varied points of view, perspectives, and denomination. I don't want to just focus on ours. But from ours, the decline already was happening. The decline of the denomination offering programs. It wasn't until we got to the point just about 10 years ago where we said, what do the churches need? Instead of, in other words, how can we resource the churches and how God is working locally instead of have this top-down, you need this program. That's when things begin to change, particularly here at Lifeway, when we've talked about the churches.
All right, number two, programs and ministries are added regularly, but few or none are ever deleted. So when you added the BYM.
Oh, we didn't think about deleting anything.
No.
No.
Just do another thing.
Yeah, it was one thing after another. Let's get more active. And you know what? I thought being more active doing things in the church was more spiritual, too. The more active I was in terms of activities.
Yeah.
In terms of activities, doing things, the more I was doing things for God. Oh, I may have neglected Sam, Art, and Jess, or at the time, Sam and Art. I may have not have been a good husband at times because I was so busy with the church. But I thought, okay, busyness equals spirituality, and so therefore I am going to stay busy. It's the same thing with church activities and ministries. We'd never think about deleting them.
No. Nope.
How do you delete them? I think the best way to delete it is when you go through a budget time, and you just like a budget, you should start with a blank sheet of paper and say, if this was an ideal world, what would our budget look like? We call it a zero-sum budget. I would do the same thing with ministries. I'm not saying you always would delete it because they're political and pragmatic implications, quite frankly.
Yep.
But you need to be asking the question.
Well, that brings us to number three. That's the problem. Programs and ministries become sacred cows.
Yep, yep. Sister Harriet, Brother Frank, they said that this was their ministry, this was their program, and as a result, nobody can touch it. You ever been to church with one of those?
Yeah. If people say they haven't been at a church with one of those,
they haven't been going to church
been
very
lying.
Long.
Yes.
Yeah. It can be some type of activity in the church that may have had the origin 3 decades ago, but today you ask, why do we do this? And the answer is, well, we've always done it.
And it might still be a good thing.
But it might not be the best thing.
Exactly.
Well, you know, do you remember the first sentence of Breakout Churches?
It is a sin to be good when God has called you to be great.
Exactly. There's a great commission, a great commandment, and love in chapter 13 of 1 Corinthians is the greatest of these. We don't need to settle for mediocrity or just things that are okay. We don't need to be doing things in our church. We need to be doing the best things in our church according to the way God has called us now.
And the problem is that it happens because alignment is not asked about on the front end.
Okay. Let's talk about that. Sounds a little bit like Simple Church.
Sounds a lot like Simple Church.
Well, yeah, Simple Church has...
Available at Lifeway.com, as well as Breakout Churches.
The thesis, though, of Simple Church is not eliminate things. The thesis is to have a process for discipleship and make sure everything is lined up and that you have a flow, and then whatever doesn't fit in is when you eliminate.
Careful
Many
with that.
People came to Simple Church thinking that all it was about was cutting things out. It was not.
That's step four.
That was, yeah, if you want to look at it sequentially, it was somewhat step four. But it was really about a process of discipleship. I know I've told you this before. You remember the original proposed title?
The Disciple... Or
now, you're close.
Process-driven church or something
exactly.
like that?
Exactly.
Process-driven church.
Right after
Sounds
another
a little bit familiar.
Purpose-driven yeah. church. And so we didn't want another PDC there, and so we changed the name to Simple Church. We, Eric Geiger and me, and our editor at the time, Paul Engel. And the whole idea behind it was, let's get a process of discipleship, and let's make sure that everything is aligned on the front end. Why are we doing what we're doing instead of let's add something else?
Because alignment. If it's not aligned, that leads to number five. You have silo behavior among the different ministries of the church.
Your wife has served to several churches as a children's minister.
She has.
She ever talked about silos?
Oh, man.
Where the children's ministry doesn't know what the student ministry doesn't know what the worship ministry doesn't know what the discipleship ministry doesn't know what the pastor's doing.
Oh, well, she may know, but people may not care.
Okay.
I mean, that's the other thing is that they know that you've got this going on and this got going on, and they're like, well, I don't care if you've got that going on the same day. I'm doing this.
Yep.
That's a bigger problem.
Yep, yep. It's not only lack of alignment, it's lack of caring about the alignment. Silo behavior is pervasive in any organization while you don't do something intentionally the other way. You will gravitate, you will naturally move towards silo behavior. It is just it's just like any type of inertia. That is where you will move. You've seen it here at Lifeway. You're still here at Lifeway, but it has been more pronounced in the past where you had this silo behavior where everybody operated within their own sphere without counting for the good of the whole. And so you get a church that's busy and everybody in the worship ministry wants to continue doing worship things. Everybody in the children's ministry wants to have a load of children's things to do, activities. Everybody in the discipleship group ministry wants to keep you as busy as possible in the group ministry. But many times, the leaders of those ministries are not asking, well, what happens to this person who has a middle schooler and an elementary school, and they're pulled here and here, and they're supposed to be here. They get so busy, many of them just burn out and drop out and don't come see the church again.
Yeah, and we're kicking off the summer today. It's, you know, first week of June, and I know that's a big problem in the summer because you have, it seems like people think, well, they're out of school, we can do activities all the time. But parents, I mean, I'm still going to work every day.
Yeah.
I can't, like, cart my kid around all over the place just because they've got stuff going on at the church. And, you know, I've got a kid, I've got two preschoolers, I've got a kid in children's ministry and one in youth ministry. So
how old is your youngest? How old is she?
Two.
Boy, really?
Yeah.
I was about to say, it seemed like it was a long time ago, but it's only been 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know when you were first coming to Lifeway, it was like, baby again.
Yeah, I only had two when I got here, and now I got four. Yeah. So
It happened rather quickly. But, yeah, the silo behavior is something that adds to the busyness of churches. Everybody is growing their own kingdom instead of the whole thing.
Yeah, number six is something you kind of talked about and touched on earlier. It's a lack of an evaluation process. A lot of times this goes with that budgetary time.
It's the natural time. You're sitting down and you're saying, what is the best use of the funds that God is giving us through the gifts? And as you're doing that, you then need to ask the question, do we need to continue doing what we've always been doing? And what happens, this is not rhetorical. I mean, you can answer it if you want to. What happens if you find a ministry that is really not as effective as it once was and it's time to eliminate it? What would you do?
Well, you try to eliminate it.
Yeah, you try to, but then you're going to have the sacred cow issue. You're going to
have... We have a podcast on that, I think. How to eliminate ministries.
Could we get one. could be a very good one. I know one time when we eliminated a ministry where I was, and a lady just really got angry at me. I mean,
shocker.
And in a public meeting, and through this ministry, which was an evangelistic ministry, one person had come to Christ in the last 2 years.
Oh, and it wasn't a very evangelistic ministry then.
And the proportion of funds that we were spending toward that was inordinate. And she stood up. She said, are you telling me that one soul is not worth however many dollars that is? Of course, you know me, Jonathan. I need a little more circumspect behavior and check what comes out the mouth before I put it in gear. I said,
you're looking at me for advice on that?
No, I'm not looking at you. Okay. I'm just saying we're both sinners. I responded by saying, did you know if we put that same type of resources into this other evangelistic ministry that we would probably reach 50 people instead of one? Are 50 souls not important to you? It was not a good moment.
You were good until that last part.
Yes, yes.
You made it personal.
I did, and because I took it personally. I just thought the excuse, the behavior was unacceptable, and I just needed to control myself better.
All right, number seven, ministry becomes facility-centered. Are we seeing this as much as we used to?
Certainly not with the newer churches.
Okay.
We're seeing less facility-centric churches.
Well, it seems like I'm seeing more churches doing stuff outside.
Yeah.
And even the churches that have the facilities, there seems to be a little bit more intentionality about meeting offsite or meeting, you know, doing different things outside of the campus.
Are helping our members to realize that ministry is not a building, that ministry is wherever the church is. And where's the church? Wherever the members are, wherever the people of the church are. That's the type of emphasis we can get in. But you can't go the other extreme where you just don't have any type of accountability, any type of organization, and therefore people really aren't doing ministry. They're just there at Starbucks to drink coffee. Not just to do ministry. I know you can go to Starbucks to drink coffee any other coffee shop. By the way, you and I recently were at Southeastern Seminary.
Uh-huh. Best coffee in America.
What was that coffee?
Back Alley Coffee.
That vanilla latte was to die for.
The conga pour over is just amazing.
That's what I thought. What?
The conga pour over.
Oh, wow.
That's what I had. It's the best.
Oh, you're not talking about the vanilla latte.
No.
I thought they poured conga or something over my vanilla latte. And
no.
That's why it's so good.
No. But, you raved about that vanilla latte for days.
Yes.
So, still talking about it.
It was
Back Alley Coffee. You can order the stuff online. I would buy the conga blend. It's from Ethiopia, I believe, and it's phenomenal.
Kenya,
Ethiopia, one of those two.
So are they a sponsor or what, Jonathan?
They can be. Just get in touch with me. I mean, the guy's a professor at Southeastern, so I'm sure Art knows him.
Okay.
So it's phenomenal coffee. It's some of the best coffee I've ever had, really.
Back to our point.
Oh, the coffee wasn't the point.
When churches become too busy, it's many times because they're trying to keep the facility occupied instead of just doing ministry.
Well, is it because they feel obligated? We paid X amount for this building. We need to have junk in it.
We better do something. And the easier solution is don't build so much.
Or build strategically.
There's a better one. Build strategically for the future.
Because if you're going to use it and it's strategic and things like that,
yeah.
I mean, go for it.
More power to you.
But if not, don't.
And like many people copied programs, Oh. Many people copied buildings.
Yes.
We've got to get
arms
a gym.
Race. Yes.
Yes, exactly. One thing after another.
We talked about that a while back. I don't know if we talked about it on the podcast, but I did find out that First Baptist Merritt Island has a bowling alley.
I remember when bowling alleys were really in and large
they
churches.
Were in still. I mean, I'm a fan.
You think you should go to church to bowl?
No, I'm just saying that it's a nice.
Yeah.
It's a nice perk and privilege, Dr. Rayner. It's a country club after all.
Oh, wow.
All right, number eight. Final one, lack of courageous leadership. I think that can be summed up, all seven of the previous ones can kind of be summed up in that number eight.
Always easier to say yes and add than to say no and delete.
Ooh.
Those are the toughest decisions that you might have to make, because when you delete, and you've seen that with my life here at Lifeway, when you delete something, sometimes you have to suffer the consequences for a long time, and therefore many leaders decide we're not going to delete because it's easier just not to do anything. So, Jonathan, in summary, why are churches becoming busy? Activity synonymous with ministry. Programs and ministries added regular. None are deleted. Some are sacred cows. You don't ask on the front end, does this really align with all we're doing? Silo ministry, different staff members or lay leaders are competing for ministry time. Lack of evaluation process. Sometimes the ministry is focused on the facility instead of on the ministry. And finally, lack of courageous leadership. You sum all those up, you got a busy church.
Yep.
And as always, we want to thank Midwestern Seminary for being our sponsor.
Yep, Midwestern Seminary is one of the fastest growing seminaries in North America and exists to train leaders for the church. The local church is God's plan A for the proclamation of the gospel, and there is no plan B. And this is Midwestern's vision and heartbeat, equipping pastors and other ministry leaders who are called to expand God's mission in the world through the local church. At Midwestern Seminary, they train leaders for the church. Visit them online at mbts.edu and begin your ministry training today. You notice it doesn't say they train leaders for the busy church.
Yeah, yeah.
Just for the church.
Just
to live on mission.
Just for the church. Wow. Yeah. So, Jonathan, as we close this out, I'm looking
at I've got to put a picture of that in the
I'm looking at this report. Yeah, put it in the show notes. I'm looking at this report, and I am talking again and again about how busy this church is. I should have gotten fired for doing this.
Well, you weren't on staff, so.
I know, but I should have been fired of something. Wow.
You're just on the search. But that's the thing. Here's the thing. That was the modus operandi of the time.
Yes.
It was the way things were. And I think we're reaping the repercussions of that 35 years later.
Totally agree. Let the listeners see the famous search committee report cover in the show notes.
I mean, that's pretty impressive, though, I must admit. I mean,
April 1982.
If you're a prospective pastor and you get that kind of layout, I mean, you're thinking, wow, all right.
Back then.
Yeah.
Back then. So, all right.
All right. Well, thanks again for joining us here today on Rayner on Leadership. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes. Visit us online at tomrayner.com, where we are growing healthy churches together.